Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 15 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host Matt Kupferle, and we are here bright and early on a Sunday morning grinding away. Matthew's delivered another great article that we're going to go over. Matthew, how's it going?
It's going well. I've been up since 4 a.m. in California and just grinding away on this Fab article. I'm ready to send that off to the editor and ready to talk some Fab. There is a lot of people to talk about. So
that, my friend, in reading your article is an understatement. There are so many different things to talk to. We'll try to keep it to 60 minutes or less, but as you guys know, between Matthew and I, we both are nerds. We love baseball, and we get really excited. So we're going to keep this as concise as we can, but there is a lot to get through. So as always, we're going to work through 15-team and 12-team. We also saw a number of people ask some questions about, which I think is really important, people we should think about cutting at this point, which is absolutely critical as we are reaching the end of week 5, going into week 6. So that means we are about halfway through. So we'll try to pop those in as we go along as well. And Matthew, before we kick things off, you want to just tackle what we do or maybe don't know about the Mets and COVID-19?
Yeah, so going into the schedule before hitting on players, the Mets and Yankees were canceled, as we all likely know, this weekend due to a player and a staff member apparently testing positive for COVID-19. And then it was recently reported on Saturday evening that the test had been coming back negative. So everything sounds positive on that end. And I have asterisks next to the Yankees and Mets and Marlins, and that's because just as of right now, I always like to plan as if these players or the teams aren't going to be playing, just to keep it on the safe side so you have other players available to fill into those roles if those teams do get postponed. So it does sound optimistic and as if they are going to play, but I still, when a team has already missed time due to COVID-19, I like to play it safe and act as if they aren't going to play. So there are asterisks in my article this week with those teams, just because we aren't 100% certain if they are going to play. But there are a few teams. The Cardinals and Reds actually get 8 games due to a couple doubleheaders. And then there's quite a few teams that get 7 games. The teams that you want to be conscious of this week are the Braves, Yankees, and White Sox, and that's because they only have 5 games. So if you have some of those hitters, they're only going to give you 2 games the first half of the week, Monday through Thursday. So those might be, if there's fringe players that are borderline, kind of like a Matt Adams or
sure,
somebody on the White Sox that you don't normally, maybe even like a Nomar Mazara.
Yeah.
You might want to sit them this week because the volume's not going to be there. So yep. Be aware of maybe having somebody that can fill in that has 4 games this week, you know, somebody that's a fringe player that's available on a team that's playing 7 or 8 games. So that's something to be aware of when trying to manipulate the schedule and get an advantage on your opponents, is get those extra games in, because you want to, each week it's a churn and burn like we talk about, but you want to just add and cut these guys, the back end guys. So if there's somebody on the Cardinals or Reds that's available and you notice that they might be playing 3 or 4 games that first week, even if they sit out in one of the doubleheaders, that's going to be more useful than, you know, someone that's borderline only getting 2 games.
No, that's a great point. And I think we've tried to work through this, but as a reminder, you know, with these COVID situations, you want to have that bench flexibility. I think Matthew and Scott both talked about constructing their benches and making sure you have enough flexibility. It's going to be crucial as you move through. And with the Mets, have kind of a quirk in their schedule. Last week, they played the Marlins before getting shut down. We're scheduled to play the Yankees. And then they repeat their week, which is kind of interesting. So keep an eye on the situation, especially for Marlins and Yankees as you go through. You know, a guy that we've talked a lot about, like Mike Tauchman, for example, they only have 2 games in the first 4, and he faces Max Fried potentially against the Atlanta Braves. So those are the kind of things you're going to need to monitor as you move through the schedule. But let's dive in right into players. We're going to start off on our 15-teamers. We're going to talk hitters. Matthew, a number of kind of lower dollar value guys that are interesting, about $1 to $9 that stick out to me. A couple names I'm going to throw at you right away and then have you touch on some other interesting names as well. Some ones I've been debating recently, Abraham Toro in Houston getting some more playing time as they are just ravaged by injuries right now. Adam Duvall seems to be locking into some significant playing time with the Atlanta Braves as they're kind of shuffling a bunch of different things around. The Giants, as much as I never thought Brandon Crawford would ever be fantasy relevant again, the Giants, man, are just piling up runs. That West Coast, you go to bed and wake up, and the Mariners and the Giants feel like they put up another crooked number. We've got a prospect like
Crawford. Crawford's hot. He's smoking hot. His last 2 weeks, he's El Fuego. So
yeah, there's a number of those. Yeah,
kind of
crazy.
To add some of those guys,
too, right?
Both of them. The entire Giants offense has actually been producing at a decent clip, but. Yeah, I like to add some. Sorry to cut you off, but I like to add some of those guys that they're like, well, why is he there? Well, it's because he's Brandon Crawford's an everyday player, and when somebody's hitting the ball well, you kind of want to just ride the wave. And if you can get another week of what he's been doing, you know, just keep riding it. And then once you notice when it starts to tail off, or if something changes, or you know, there's difficult matchups, or they're only playing five games in a week, or whatever it may be, then that's when you cut. So, he's kind of piqued my interest a little bit.
Yep, and then the three names I think that are the most interesting to me I'd love to get your thoughts on, and I'll give a quick blurb about why I think they're interesting. David Bote of the Cubs. For me, I'm interested because the Cubs lineup is really struggling, and they've been getting beat up recently. Their run differential, they're just getting smashed by the White Sox this weekend. But David Bote's one that's been hitting the ball well, so I'd be curious to get kind of where you think about him. Josh Reddick we talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago. He continues to play and play a lot, and again they are just ravaged by injury, so he's been hitting in a premium spot in the order, so he's number two for me. And then I can never go without a podcast, if I can help it, with talking about Yan Gomes, who I think has homered in back-to-back days now, and I've been kind of churning and burning at the catcher spot. So those are three that stick out for me, Matthew, but why don't you run through the very low-dollar guys in 15-team formats and who sticks out for you?
Okay, well, to touch on the guys that you mentioned, David Bote, I do like. I like him. I know that he's hitting the ball hard. His hard hit rate's at 48.6%. And the only knock on him right now is that he's hitting ninth in the lineup. But if he's going to continue to play every day with Chris Bryant on the IL, you mentioned the struggles of the Cubs, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him one day hit leadoff. You know, today he could lead off because that's kind of what the Cubs do. And David Ross is definitely willing to mix things up. And if he's able to ignite the offense, then something like that could stick. So I do like David Bote. Josh Reddick, we've seen hit in the two hole. They're dinged up with injuries. Jordan Alvarez is on the IL. Alex Bregman is on the IL. So that's opened up some spots in the thick part of their lineup. Michael Brantley is going to be coming back, so we can expect him to be hitting cleanup. And we've seen Carlos Correa hit third. So Josh Reddick, he might not be hitting second anymore, but he's somebody that's just playing every day in a decent or good lineup. So he's somebody that's always, you know, a viable, just one of those oatmeal options. And then Yan Gomes, I actually added him a couple spots last week. And even on one of my main event teams, I have Yan Gomes and his teammate Kurt Suzuki. And that might sound odd to you because I'm kind of, you know, capping my ceiling in volume, but sometimes you don't want all the volume from the catchers, you know, like, for example, Mike Zunino can crush you. Yeah, it's bad volume. So, and I've also, the Nationals have used Yan Gomes as a DH while having Kurt Suzuki catch games. So sometimes they are both in the lineup at the same time.
Sure.
And we have seen Yan Gomes, once he's come back off the IL, he has looked really good. And like you mentioned, he has hit two home runs in back-to-back games. So, he was projected to be the guy that was supposed to catch two out of every three, I believe.
Yep.
I like him, and I still do like Kurt Suzuki, so don't drop Kurt Suzuki either. I like them both, and neither hurt you. So Yan Gomes is somebody. There's actually this week I've noticed there's quite a few catching options. So Jorge Alfaro, he came back. I saw him, you know, enter the game yesterday after Francisco Cervelli left. And there's a couple others that we're going to talk about. So if there's somebody that you're like kind of thinking about cutting, like this week, I think I might cut Jason Castro just because he was kind of looking, you know, he's not doing so well. And I know that Max Stassi hit the IL, so that should help him back with his playing time because Stassi was kind of eating into that. So that's something I have to look into. But if there's catchers that you are thinking about cutting, this is the week to do it because there are quite a few options.
Yeah, and Jason Castro, you know, he can be a little bit of lightning in a bottle, but he can also be one of those guys, right, Matthew, that it's exactly what you just said. I think with bad volume, he might play a lot, but he could drag your total numbers down overall too, right? So it's definitely interesting. That's a point. Now that you talk through it, I don't know if I've ever really thought about it that way, but a guy like Yan Gobes and or Kurt Suzuki could end up being more valuable if they only catch 3 to 4 days a week or 3 to 4 games a week or however you want to phrase it, because they may be just really fresh in that position. So that's a really good call out from that perspective. And yes, we will definitely talk about some interesting catching options that are available. Let's move up a little bit to the 1 to 5%. Brendan Rodgers called up by the Rockies. I'm very curious as to what you think about Brendan Rodgers. And of course, the Rockies can't be content. So after Garrett Hampson hitting leadoff, I think 7 or 8 days in a row, we've seen Raimel Tapia hit leadoff back to back. So go figure, Rockies are going to Rocky at this point. We have Chance Sisko, who batted leadoff for the Orioles for a bit and then has slid down recently. And then a power guy who seems MLB ready to me, and an offense that gets to torch the Red Sox, it feels like every other day to me, because I don't own a whole lot of this offense, is Ryan Mountcastle. Super pedigreed prospect, power hitting first baseman, corner infielder, just an interesting option. And I think a lot of people have owned Rio Ruiz, but Rio Ruiz is hitting, I think, 207 coming into the game. So there's a trade-off there, right? You're sacrificing average, but you're getting that pop. So Matthew, of those guys, do you think the Rockies are going to let Brendan Rodgers play, or what are they doing calling up what would be, I think, a seventh left-handed bat starting in that lineup against a right-handed pitcher?
So, well, Brendan Rodgers is a right-handed hitter.
I'm sorry. He is right-handed. You're right.
Yeah. So that's one of the pros, or one of the good things going for him, but I do like the pedigree, and we do know how the Rockies do manage or handle their young players. So you have to side on the air of caution with that. And then on top of that, we haven't even seen him play every single day since being called up. So that's already a sign of, okay, they're going to kind of, you know, put him in and out of the lineup. What I think is going to happen, in my own opinion, is that he plays every day against left-handed pitching. And then he's kind of in and out shuffling against right-handed pitching. So for the most part, he's going to be a platoon player. And if they don't play 100% of their games at Coors Field, so I think I'm going to simmer my expectations on him, unfortunately. And then his teammate that you mentioned, Raimel Tapia, I crap on him a lot, but we've seen him now a couple games in a row against right-handed pitching. He's now leading off, and he has 3 stolen bases on the year, and he does have decent contact, and it's really just the power issue. But if he's going to get some opportunities leading off, and if it ends up being something that does happen to be against right-handed pitching moving forward, especially with David Dahl on the IL with back tightness, and he started the season as the leadoff hitter, but then we saw him get demoted kind of hitting 6th and 7th in that lineup once struggles were occurring. So, and there is an opportunity there. So Ryan Altoppi is something I do like. You mentioned Mountcastle. I don't think that he's going to be a bad average liability. And the Orioles offense is exceeding expectations, and they're scoring a lot of runs. So I like that offense. I like the ballpark. They're young-handed. Now that they called him up, I think that he's going to get his burn pretty much every single day. And his teammate, Chance Sisko, he's been a hot topic on Twitter this week. A lot of people do like him, and he's people have been kind of itching for him to get his opportunities. And the only issue there is Pedro Severino's, like, been the best catcher in baseball, and that's his teammate. So I know that they have been trying to get both of them in the lineup because both of them are doing well. And we've seen Severino get some opportunities as DH, and we've also seen Sisko slide up into the leadoff spot.
Yep.
It hasn't been every single day. So Don't bank on him being like the leadoff hitter or anything like that. Sure. But excuse me, I like Chancisco, and especially like you mentioned, even if he doesn't play every single day, if it's quality, you want quality over quantity at the catcher position, in my opinion. Yep. So if he's going to be giving you the quality that we have been seeing, then I think that you should definitely be bidding on Chancisco as well. And then there's one other person is Joey Wendell, and he's multi-position eligibility, and he's playing a lot for the Rays, and he looks good. So I think that he's somebody else to consider.
So, Matthew, a couple of reader questions I got, which are actually super relevant from an outfield perspective, because I'm with you. I think Tapia is interesting, and he has actually started the last six games, including against the lefty. He batted sixth about 5 days ago. So if you've got a roster option and Tapia is available, are you prioritizing Tapia over a guy like a Harrison Bader or a Scott Kingery? What are you doing there in that format?
Yeah, I would prefer Tapia over both, unfortunately. There's actually Phil Gosselin is in the $1 to $9 range, so sub 1%, but he's been eating into some playing time, and yep. We already saw him playing every single day against left-handed pitching, and then I noticed that he was in the lineup the other day against right-handed pitching. So if that's something that continues to happen, Scott Kingery's kind of a platoon player at that point, yep. Or, you know, a part-time player, I should say. And if so, then, you know, then it's hard to cut him because you see the power and speed combo, yeah. and the pedigree and what we hope or expect, sure. out of him. And it just doesn't seem like 2020 is going to be the year for that to happen, which is okay. There's still plenty of time for him to figure it out and have a successful career. But I think that there's just too many factors that are kind of now eating into his playing time. So,
yep.
As of now, and especially because we only have, you know, just a little over a month away,
yeah.
You kind of need to keep, you know, the pedal to the metal. So Rymel Tapia over Scott Kingery for me. And then who was the other person you mentioned?
Harrison Bader.
Harrison Bader. Yeah, I would cut Bader's actually, he's been doing a little bit better than expected, I believe. Or I guess it only.
I mean, I hate Harrison Bader, but I'm a Cardinal person that hates all Cardinals. So, no, he actually.
No, yeah, he's still doing crappy. Yeah, no.
Bader can't hit sliders, period. I mean, he swings as if the ball is traveling right down the middle, but it ends up 2.5 feet away from him. So it's a personal, it's not you, Harrison, it's me. But it is kind of you. You cannot hit a breaking ball. And it amazes me. It's kind of like Matthew watching people pitch to Luis Robert. He can't hit a slider, but people keep throwing him fastballs, and he keeps hitting them about 670 feet. So I don't get it. But Harrison Bader can't hit it that far. But same thing. But, you know, Bader's great defensively. He plays probably more than he should. And Dylan Carlson struggled for the Cardinals coming up. So I think he's going to continue to get at-bats. He's another one, Matthew, though. He's going to give you volume. It's going to be crappy volume, and I don't want him to bury my batting average already more than it's struggling in some leagues. So,
it's crazy. So the Cardinals, once Dylan Carlson got called up, and before he was called up, I was thinking, okay, well, who's going to be the odd man out? Is it Bader? Is it Fowler? Is it Tyler O'Neill? And it's all four of those guys are playing every single day.
Mm-hmm.
They're rolling out four outfielders a day. So that's not really the issue, is the playing time. It's just the quality of it. So
yeah, they should just cut Harrison Bader from their roster, and they'd be a lot better off at this point.
Well, his defense is really good. So that's going to be,
he is fast as hell. I'll give him that.
He's legit out there. Yeah.
All right. Last players we want to wrap up with 15 team are, ironically, to Matthew's point, both catchers. Will Smith is supposed to be activated officially today by the Los Angeles Dodgers. I cut him in a league last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, when he got hurt, because one, he was performing poorly. Two, he was in a timeshare with Austin Barnes, and then he got hurt. So I had to churn and burn a little bit there. And then, as everybody knows, I hope everybody knows, Joey Bart, mega, mega, mega prospect for the Giants. Gotta assume he eats into playing time for a guy like Chadwick Trump. I think Tyler Heineman was splitting time there. Matthew, what are you thinking between those two catchers? You've got Joey Bart obviously commanding more of your fab budget, but how are you prioritizing at the catcher position? And what do you see playing out there?
Yeah, so remember, these are just projected or what I'm kind of predicting that the the range of you know budget allocations will be. So I have Joey Bart above Will Smith, and Will Smith had an asterisk next to his name because he is over 50% owned, but I know that he was, like you mentioned, he was cut in leagues because people were uncertain of what the next stiffness or how severe it was. So if he's available, I would probably prefer it's close actually. Joey Bart's
going to get
more playing time.
Matthew, knowing the Dodgers as well as you do, do you think he goes right back into a timeshare with Austin Barnes, or will he command the lion's share of playing time?
I think it's close to 50-50. I know most catcher situations are more 70-30, 60-40, but
yeah.
Barnes has looked good, and Will Smith, he's good, man. He really is. He's a great hitter. So if he's healthy, and who knows how long the neck issue was, you know, kind of causing him some issues at the plate. So we don't really know that situation either, and if that kind of was eating into what he can do. And in 32 at bats, he has 8 RBIs. So even hitting 8, it's like 25% of his at bats are producing an RBI.
Yeah.
So
no, that's fair. And is Austin Barnes, Matthew, the personal catcher for Kershaw, for sure?
Correct.
Okay. So that's at least one start a week we know Will Smith is likely not taking, right?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Barnes is savage behind the dish, dude.
Oh, he's great.
He's
basically Gary Sanchez, but he's actually good at catching the baseball. So
yeah, and then on the base paths, he's one of the, if not the fastest catcher in the league. So yeah. he has a stolen base, and I do have him in the $1 to $9 range, mm-hmm. and that's because if he gets cut by people that are concerned, if Will Smith gets or when Will Smith gets activated, I think that Austin Barnes could provide you that good volume that we were talking about. You know, so maybe the quantity isn't going to be there like we saw this last week, but when he does play, I think that you could get some production out of him because we've seen the last couple seasons were bad, but we've also seen some of the we've seen a good season out of him, and he's kind of replicating that right now. So I do like Austin Barnes as well, but touching on Joey Bart real quick before moving on to pitchers, I have him as the highest hitter this week. His pedigree, first, second pick overall, people have been clamoring about him, waiting for him to come up. We've seen him now hit every single day in the lineup. I want to say it was 7th in the lineup for the Giants, and he's expected to play every day, you know, as much as catchers do. Yep. And the pedigree, he looks good, and the Giants lineup is doing, they're producing at a much better clip than I thought. So I would prefer, probably Joey Bart, because we mentioned the uncertainties of Will Smith's playing time moving forward because Austin Barnes is eating into it. So Joey Bart would be the guy for me. And it kind of, it's weird that there's not very many hitters this week in that high range. But I think even though he is a catcher, I think with the pedigree, I think that we will see bids over $100.
Oh, I 100% agree. He hit 6th and 7th when he got called up. They gave him a day off yesterday, but Joey Bart, just massive power numbers in the minor leagues that I think you're intrigued by. I think it's definitely going to cost a pretty penny. I don't think it's a bad idea to almost put in kind of an enforced bid. So even if you think he's going to go, make sure if you've got a place to play him, at least put the bid in, because you never know. People are starting fantasy football. Things are going to get weird. They may be busy. But I totally agree with what you're saying, Matthew. So any other batters that stick out to you before we move to pitchers?
No, and I'm really excited to talk about pitchers. So
All right. Perfect. Let's dive right in. Low-range pitchers, a bunch of them, very interesting names. Some ones that stick out to me either in the $1 to $9 range or the 1 to 5% range. Your boy, you were all over in draft season. Unfortunately, he has not pitched that I'm aware of, or maybe he's come back in the last couple of nights. I just haven't seen. AJ Puck of the A's is coming back for a team that, man, is winning a ton of baseball games, and they're fun to watch. Alex Reyes made a doubleheader start, came in and was just throwing absolute smoke for the Cardinals. guy like Gregory Soto has been lights out in the pen for the Tigers, along with a guy like Josh Stamont for the Royals, who threw one of the best gifts I saw, 100 miles an hour straight down the middle, called a ball, and everybody went nuts for robot umps on Twitter. And then you've got some guys in the that are maybe a little bit more expensive. A guy I'm really interested in is Chad Kuhl. He has been fantastic in limited duty, admittedly, but he's been really, really good from a starter perspective. So in that range, and Matthew, I've got some challenges and some 15-teamers where I'm looking to probably get aggressive in my pitching options because my hitting's going well, but if I'm going to make a move in these leagues – I'm going to need to be really timely in my bids. Who stands out to you in the lower end range of pitchers and 15-teamers?
Okay, so I'll have you touch on Alex Reyes in a minute. And someone similar to him would be AJ Puck. So we've mentioned he's going to be returning soon, and he threw 45 pitches in his last session. And the Oakland A's manager mentioned that they kind of envision him pitching 2 to 3 innings a couple times a week moving forward once he does return. So he's not going to be stretched out, and he's not going to be in the rotation like we initially expected at the beginning of this season. So we can see him pop. Okay, so the ceiling on somebody like him, let's say if he is really feeling fine and the shoulder's good and he feels good and he's successful moving forward, the ceiling would be like James Karinchak, but with 2 or 3 innings an outing.
Yeah.
Okay. The downside is he comes back and the first pitch he throws, he looks for the trainer and that's it.
Yeah.
So the range of outcomes for AJ Puck is extreme, but if you're able to get him for a little bit and you can afford to stash him, I think that he could be one of those guys that you just kind of plug in each week and hope that he vultures a win along the way while giving you some strikeouts and really good ratios. So
Yep. That's
kind of what you want to envision, or that's what we kind of hope for, because we're all intrigued with the long hair and the velocity and all that stuff. So AJ Puck is kind of like that guy. And then you mentioned Chad Kuhl. I actually have him in the range one above. So I think that he's going to go for a little bit more than those other guys we're mentioning. But to go about Chad Kuhl, so he's healthy. That's the key component there with Chad Kuhl. He's battled a lot of injuries. His swinging strike rate's never been high, but it is at a career high, even though it's about average at 10.9%. So that's kind of something, I guess, a positive to see, that his swinging strike rate is going up. His Sierra is a little bit higher than his ERA. So his Sierra is at 4.22 and his ERA is at 2.84. So he's kind of doing a little bit better than suggested. And then his strikeout rate is at 25.7%, which I like, and his walk rate is below 10%. He's never really had a huge walk rate issue either. So I like what I'm seeing. It does seem like he's kind of getting hit hard a little bit, though. And I watched a little bit of his last outing, but I kind of want to continue to watch those moving forward to see if he is kind of getting a little bit lucky. The BABIP is at 182 as well, so maybe he is getting a little bit lucky for now. But I've always been a fan of his stuff, and it's nice to see that it's translating and that he is healthy. So I do like Chad Kuhl. And then one other person that I want to mention, he only went 3 1/3, and I was intrigued with him at the beginning of the year. Fortunately for me, I didn't end up getting any shares of him, and that's Reynaldo Lopez. He pitched yesterday. He went into the fourth inning, and he's only has one start this upcoming week, but the pedigree's there, and we saw his second half success in 2019, and he faces off against the Royals, who have, I think, one of the top five strikeout rates in the league. And it's at 24.8% against right-handed pitching. So I'm not sure that he'll go that deep in this next start, but he's not going to cost you much. And if you're really, really, really desperate, then that's somebody that you could, you know, hopefully get 4 or 5 innings out of, maybe get a win, since the White Sox are just hitting the shit out of the ball. And he could be somebody that won't cost much and could get you a win with some strikeouts along the way. So he's somebody else. And then, real quick, actually, so like Tyler Duffy is somebody else I wanted to mention. I know that people already own Sergio Romo, because we've seen him get some save opportunities if Rogers has kind of been tapped out on back-to-back days or whatever. Rodgers has kind of struggled a little bit here and there, and he is a lefty. And I thought that that was maybe a concern for Taylor Rodgers. They might want to use him in high leverage situations if the team had, like, let's their two best hitters were lefties coming up in the eighth inning or whatever. But Rodgers gave up another run his last outing, two hits, a walk. And we've now seen his ERA get to 4.82. His whip's at 1.39, which is concerning. The strikeouts are still there, but they're not nearly as elite as they were the season before. So if that continues to happen, we know that the Twins are in win now mode. People are going to jump to think that Sergio Romo is going to be the guy, which he most likely will be. But Tyler Duffy is really good as well. And we have seen how the Twins can get back-to-back-to-back save opportunities. And if Rodgers does scuffle a little bit, I think Duffy could get that opportunity. And if so, he's going to end up costing you a little bit more. But for now, I have him underneath $10. Kind of a speculation play.
No, I don't mind him at all. He's just been one that – like Lopez. I mean, Lopez is a great example, especially if you're chasing wins in a league, which is what I'm doing, to your point. That White Sox lineup is terrifying, and they are going to bash the ball around. Now, they got a tough division, right, with the Indians and the Twins, although the Twins' offense is not looking great lately. They could easily have some great matchups, and hopefully you get five innings out of Lopez. They pull him, turn it over to the bullpen, and you get that win, right? So I'm curious as to – so I want to talk about Alex Reyes a little bit. And I don't know if you were able to watch his start against the Cubs this week. I watched it. It was interesting, to say the least. But it kind of highlighted my concerns with him, Matthew. Tons of swings and misses. Velocity was outstanding. The breaking ball and the slider were ridiculous. But he was all over the place also when he was throwing. I mean, it's a guy that you would expect that's had a lot of injuries, that hasn't had a lot of game speed. I totally get it. Only a 40%
in the game.
What's that? He did opened he the open second. The game? He did. He opened the second game of the doubleheader against the Cubs.
Okay. And pitching one inning at a time.
Yes, I think he threw two this time against the Cubs. He threw one in his first appearance. I could be wrong about that.
It was only one inning.
Okay.
And
okay.
It definitely was the one you were talking about. So he opened I think he did open, but he didn't.
Maybe
have
I saw him
walks.
Pitch into the second inning and he couldn't get an out. I'm not sure.
Probably walked a guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing is he only had a 40% zone rate, and when he threw strikes, he couldn't be touched. He has a 14.5% swinging strike rate so far. His velocity, as hard as he throws, his velocity is actually up even more this year. Across the board, across all pitches. My concern is I think he's thrown 20 and 24 pitches in his two outings so far this year. I don't know that he's going to have an A.J. Puck type impact like you mentioned. I don't know that he can have even a James Karinchak type impact, because my fear is he can't even get 6 to 9 outs, even if he's, you know, not the opener, but he comes in second. My concern is that he can't even get through a couple of innings, but the stuff is there. He looked nasty. I'm just very concerned on how the Cardinals are going to use him, because quite frankly, he's looked kind of semi-game ready, but not super game ready at this point. Have you watched him throw it all?
Yeah, I watched his last outing a little bit. The velocity did look nice, but the command and control is definitely not all there. And so you did mention, like, if he's not coming in late in the game either, there's not going to be win opportunities or save opportunities or anything like that. So somebody similar to him that it's not going to cost a lot, or I don't think will cost a lot, is Cal Quantrill.
Yes.
And we have seen him kind of vulture a save, and the Padres situation is very murky right now with Pomeranz and Yates on the IL. So Cal Quantrill would be the person there. And then kind of one last speculation, you did mention him, was Josh Stalmont.
Yes, he's awesome.
That dude with the ponytail throws some – dude, that guy throws hard. And so – there has been some rumblings about Trevor Rosenthal possibly being moved. And if that does happen, that is going to open up a situation in the Royals bullpen again. And so I have Greg Holland and Stalmont both mentioned in the article. But stuff-wise and velocity, Stalmont is obviously the higher guy there. Yeah. But it's Matheny, so I wouldn't be shocked if it's the boring Greg Holland. So
yeah, he's kind of like
– mention.
No, guys. You're totally right. Matheny always got a bad rap in St. Louis for loving vets. He's like the Dusty Baker of loving vets. You watch Josh Staumont throw, and you're like, holy shit, this guy is going to be the next huge closer. And he throws a lot of strikes. He doesn't have the issues that a lot of closers have. So I love him. I am trying to spec Adam. I've got him in a couple leagues already where I spent, I think, $2 on him, and I had no other bids. I'm throwing more money in against him. I think he's going to be this week. I think he's a great spec ad. I don't necessarily need him in a lot of places, but holy shit. There is one league that I have Matthew in a 15 teamer where my ratios are trash and I could use another reliever. And this dude is just freaking lights out. And the Royals are striking out a ton, but they're kind of interesting with Hunter Dozier back. They're hitting the baseball too. If only Adalberto Mondesi could come alive and just not be the corpse of or shell of his old self. It'd be amazing. But that top of the lineup to me is kind of fun for the Royals.
Yeah, they've been, their ISO is over 170, and I think that they've started to simmer off a little bit, and their strikeout rate is kind of, it's over, you know, almost 25%. But, yeah, so they're going to have some ups and downs. There is talent in that lineup, and they are fun to watch. So you ready to, you want to move on to
hit those
the
12
next tier here?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Or, no, not the 12
teamers. Oh, I'm sorry. What am I doing? Yes. No.
Yeah. We're not done here.
These arms. Moving into the next group, a bunch of ones that are going to cost some serious coin. You've got Alex under the Diamondbacks, who's a two-stepper this week. You've got Andrew Miller, who looks like he could be the closer for the Cardinals at this point. That bullpen is very confusing. Jordan Romano had a save opportunity for the Blue Jays, another interesting arm. Brad Keller is a two-stepper this week for the Royals, although I think there's some caution there. His next three starts are a little bit scary, so I do want to talk about him. And then it is prospect season. We've got Tarek Skubal that came up, who strikes out a ton of dudes. You were texting me last night about Tristan McKenzie, who maybe he's listed at, I think, 165 pounds. I think that's a generous listing after watching him a little bit. But that dude was throwing some freaking fire. And Sixto Sanchez was awesome yesterday. So, Matthew, let's step through those. We've even got some more names to go through. But let's talk about that next couple groups of pitchers and who gets you really excited.
Oh, man. Okay, so I think Casey Mize is going to cost the most because the pedigree plus the two-step. So adding the two-step for him is going to have to push him up the most, I'm guessing. So Mize, I think, is going to cost the most. And then Sixto Sanchez was the one throwing 100. And he has, like, the highest pedigree or just as much pedigree as Mize. So I think Sixto Sanchez is going to be the one that costs the second most. And then I've got Tarek Skubal and Tristan McKenzie in the same little bucket here, and they're still going to cost at least $100 to $150, I would assume. Skubal does pitch again today. His first outing didn't go as pretty as people would have liked. So it's going to be interesting to see how he pitches today, if he's able to go deeper, if he does rack up some strikeouts against the Cleveland Indians. Then Tarek Skubal could end up costing much more than I have him projected at. So depending on his outing, it could have an impact or will have a significant impact on how much he costs. But Tristan McKenzie, man, I watched all of his outing yesterday, and he looked cool, calm. The velocity, the mechanics, everything just looked real nice and easy coming out of his arm. It was an over-the-top delivery. He was hitting his spots. I don't know off the top of my head, but the strike percentage, just the number of strikes that he was throwing to balls was just, it was really significant, and he looked good. He looked legit, and I know the only knock on him was that he has dealt with injuries in the past, and that does scare me because in this shortened season, you know, pitching and ramping up, and we have seen a lot of pitchers get injured, so my hope is that he's missed enough time. He didn't pitch last year, and his time at the alternate site, he's just, you know, he's been feeling good and he's worked up and he's ready to go, because that's what we saw last night. And if that's the case moving forward, he could be a league winner. And in my opinion, the best pitcher out of all of these guys moving forward. So he does have that injury risk and scare. He has that in his portfolio. But Tristan McKenzie would be the guy that I really want here.
So, Matthew, I don't disagree with you. The only other name that is the most interesting to me, or I shouldn't say other because you've already talked to him about, I was actually very intrigued that Sixto Sanchez threw 66 pitches yesterday. A lot of times when these guys are getting called up, they're not being allowed to work deep into games like Tristan McKenzie is as well, right? So that's another name, and it could be 1A and 1B of what these guys go for. But I thought that was interesting too because obviously – Sanchez was who the Phillies traded for JT Realmuto. I'm curious, do you see Tristan McKenzie or Sixto Sanchez only being like a Tony Gonsolin, you know, you get a start and then you're back to the alternate site, or do you think they're both here to stay?
Okay, that's a great point. So, no, I think Sixto Sanchez stays. That's the nice part about him is unless things go really, really wrong, all these kids could get sent back down by any means, but if things go really bad, and if things go really bad, you're not going to be wanting to roster them anyways. But Sixto Sanchez, he's here to stay. I was going to mention McKenzie's concern there. So he threw 80 pitches, and I want to say in his last alternate sim game or whatever he did was 85 pitches. So it looks like his next outing maybe goes 90, and he was able to get six innings out of those 80 pitches. So he was efficient in his outing. We don't know for sure what they're going to do with Plesac and Clevinger yet, do we? Are they still just kind of dangling them and holding on to them?
Yeah, they're kind of just holding them out, and I think maybe they were trying to see how Tristan McKenzie would do, but that's two big arms coming back to the rotation, to your point, right?
Yeah, and I know that there's some service time manipulation that they could do with Clevinger and Plesac, I think. So, it's going to be interesting. I know that there was a veteran player and he wasn't named, said that he wouldn't play anymore if either of those guys were able to come back this year.
Oliver Perez.
So
he put his name
was
to it finally. Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Wow. Okay, cool. Okay. Yep. Yeah. So, and I like Ollie, man. He's
I like
an
him
old
a lot
school.
More now.
He's an OG.
I can tell you that.
Yeah, he's an OG, man. I feel like I've watched that guy pitch my entire life.
Yeah.
like seriously, all 34 years of my existence, he's been pitching.
Oliver Perez at age 54 comes in out of the bullpen
today.
That's
right. He's like the Frank Gore of MLB.
Yeah.
And then one other guy real quick. If Zach Plesac and Clevinger end up coming back,
yeah,
do not be shocked if Tristan McKenzie either gets demoted or gets moved to, you know, maybe the bullpen, because the bullpen isn't as sexy as the rotation. So
right,
the floor for McKenzie is he's not pitching at all. He gets hurt or he gets demoted or gets bumped out of the rotation because other guys come back. But the ceiling for him, I think I like him the most, especially because he pitches in the Central. Sixto Sanchez is going to be pitching in the East. And the Cleveland Indians, offense and defense is good. So, and they are competing. And so I like him a lot. One other person is Alex Young. I know he hasn't been really stretched out and we've only seen him go into like the fourth inning. But his pitch count is trending in the right direction and it is going up. He has a two-step this week against the Colorado Rockies and the San Francisco Giants, and both of those starts are at home. So if he hasn't been added, he's somebody that I would like to have some more exposure to, if not. Is there anybody else that you want to dive into before going into those two players in the 20 to 25 range?
No, you hit them all, Matthew. I dove into both Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal. I was curious as to what was going to happen there because Skubal's got the strikeout ability. But Mize is obviously the bigger pitcher. But then these young guns went yesterday, and they were awesome. So, no, you nailed them all. I think it's going to be a really interesting week because – and I know we've gotten some questions, too, from some folks on, you know, what do you do when you don't have a whole lot of fab left? I think you're going to have to spend some fab, but you never know what's going to happen within your own specific league parameters, right? So we'll see how that goes, and we'll move on. But, no, I think you nailed them all. So – anybody else before we move to 12-teamers? I tried to jump the gun on you, and I apologize. I wanted to cover.
Yeah, yeah, the 20 to 25% range.
Yep.
So $250. There are two people that could be available in your league. I know that Matt Barnes is most likely available in your league. and Emilio Pagan as well. I like Emilio Pagan much more than Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes, if I stood at the batter's box, he would walk me. So I don't really want anything to do with him. Anytime you have a reliever and you just – and if you're watching him and he's walking hitter after hitter and then ends up having to, you know, throw a meatball in there, it never ends up being good. So
the
Boston Red Sox rotation is trash outside of Nate Eovaldi. And the bullpen itself just got worse now that they lost Workman. So I don't see many games of them having the lead and then being able to hold the lead in close situations. And when they do have the lead, it's probably because the Red Sox slug their way on offense, and so they have more than a three-run lead. I know it's really hard to predict or project those situations, but those are just some of the things that also have me kind of wanting to move away from him. But he will go for a lot of money because he is going to be the closer in Boston. So that's just kind of – that's the kind of the name of the game there in Fab is if you're the closer, you're going to cost a lot regardless of who you are and whatever your walk rate is. People are going to ignore that. Emilio Pagan, he – going into this season, he was being drafted just not even as a handcuff but just as one of those – kind of like a James Karinchak where we thought – he's going to come in, he's going to get you two strikeouts, he's going to get you an elite ERA, elite whip, and maybe get a win or a save along the way. And we haven't really seen that from Pagan this year. He has struggled a bit, but now that Drew Pomeranz and Kirby Yates are both on the IL, we have seen a Pagan. He just recently got a save against the Houston Astros on August 21st. He was also used on the 20th as well, and he hasn't allowed he's allowed one run in his last three outings, so he's still not all the way corrected there, but the strikeouts seem to be coming in the last in three of the last four outings. He was racking up two strikeouts per outing in one inning. So I think that he's going to be the guy. I like the San Diego Padres. They are competitive. They are a good team. So that's the person that I would prefer if I had to choose, but I think that they might cost the same.
Okay. All right. 12 teamers. Some names I'm going to try to pick out for hitters that we haven't touched on yet in the low end range. Jaime Candelario is the primary beneficiary in Detroit, with unfortunately CJ Cron out for the season. We've got Justin Smoke and Chris Davis. If you're looking specifically for some pop, there's some interesting names. Mitch Moreland is another one that comes to mind. And the one the other one that I'm curious to get your thoughts on is Shogo Akiyama. The Reds, now that they're back, you know, have been moving. They've been shuffling their lineup around a lot to try to jumpstart things. Winker was batting leadoff for a bit. Then Winker was batting third. He was moved down in the order yesterday. He batted sixth against Kim, probably because it was a lefty. But Akiyama, I would tell you, I was very high on Akiyama before the year started, Matthew, and he's been a bit disappointing. So he's one I wanted you to touch on. And then a guy like Steven Piscotty. This A's lineup is rolling again. They've been banged up from a pitching perspective. But, man, have they been hitting the ball. And between Piscotty and Mark Canha, Chapman has come alive recently. He's another interesting name. So who sticks out for you in that very low-end range, or maybe even somebody that we have touched on that you think is very important in a 12-team format?
All right. Sorry about that. I'm sure you're going to hear some awkwardness or some slicing that's going to be had because my Skype got cut out or something happened, but it ended our call, so sorry about that. To finish up on Jaime Candelario before moving on real quick, he is first base, third base eligible, and we've seen that batting average climb back up into that 280 range that we were hoping for. He has a 346 wOBA, 119 WRC plus, and his ISO is actually at 210, which is pretty damn good. He's hitting in the thick part of the lineup, and he's multi-position eligible, so I do like him, and he's going to be playing every single day for the Detroit Tigers. So as gross as it sounds, Jaime Candelario is somebody I like. Jurickson Profar is somebody else that's multi-position eligible, and he's playing every single day, and he looks a lot better than he did before the Cronenworth wave started to come in. But Jurickson Profar has played every single day since, good gosh, I couldn't even tell you,
But he's played a lot.
I mean, every single day. It doesn't seem like he's been an everyday player, but he has. So since the 17th, he has 6 hits, 2 home runs, 5 RBI. So he's in 6 runs as well. He's kind of getting going here, and I like that. I like the offense there in San Diego, and we've seen them kind of slide up a little bit when they do play against left-handed pitching. So Jerkson Profar, somebody else, Chris Davis, Stephen Piscotty. Those are a couple other guys that you touched on. Davis, I don't like as much as Piscotty, actually. Piscotty looks better to me. Davis still looks lost at the plate, so I would prefer Piscotty over him. Yan Gomes, he's still going to be in the mix there. Chan Cisco, 2 of those guys we mentioned in the 15 teams. I also like them in 12 teams as well. And another guy that we talked about again, Raimel Tapia. So some of these guys that we mentioned in the 15 teams, they're going to cost a little bit less than 12 teams. And one more would be Nomar Mazara. I noticed that he was kind of getting cut. It's funny how some of these guys, so like Shogo Akiyama, we haven't really gotten to discuss because his ownership was already too high for us to discuss. And now we're able to discuss him because performance, right? And so now that his ownership is kind of in that area that we're able to talk about, it's funny when sometimes, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks we talk about somebody and then all of a sudden we can't talk about them anymore. It feels like they've kind of graduated from our podcast because their ownership got too high. So Shogo Akiyama, he's kind of gotten sent to adult school and now he's somebody that we have to talk about because his performance has been kind of low. But I still kind of like him. There is a little bit of a power speed threat there. And I do like the Cincinnati Reds lineup. He hasn't been hitting leadoff any as of recently, but I do like that lineup. Jesse Winker is going to be playing every single day, even against left-handed pitching. Even though it was hitting 6th yesterday, it's nice to see that he is now an everyday hitter, and it looks like he could be their 3-hole hitter against right-handed pitching moving forward. He is absolutely locked in. He's spitting on everything that isn't in his zone or his wheelhouse, and he's just crushing the ball. So I'm so stoked, happy to see Jesse Winker thriving. And so do you want to move on to the next tier?
Yes. Let's talk about that next tier because I think it's kind of interesting. I think there's a number of names that we want to touch on. Domingo Santana in the outfield is one name that sticks out to me. Gregory Polanco has some very interesting advanced metrics. He's another one. Robbie Grossman of the A's, he's been strong as well. We touched on Ryan Mountcastle and Will Smith. I do want to get your thoughts on a lot of chatter on social media on Wilmer Flores, who always known as a lefty masher, which probably makes our buddy Derek Carty puke a little bit. But Wilmer Flores, the lefty killer, has just been damn good, period, across the board. And so that's another name I think that could be interesting. He's multi-position eligible as well. I think he's eligible at first and second. So he gives you first, second, middle, and corner. Matthew, of those 1-5%, who are you looking at there that intrigues you a bit?
Sorry about that. Domingo Santana, he's kind of similar to Shogo Akiyama. He's been demoted a little bit in free agency simply because he hasn't been performing like people would have thought. But I do like him, and he's hitting sixth in the Cleveland Indians lineup, and I like that lineup. Gregory Polanco, he's hitting a little bit higher up, and he's back off the IL, and so he's going to be playing every single day. And since coming back on the 18th there, he started off a little bit cool, but we saw him get hot yesterday, hit a home run, 2 RBI, and then he had a hit in the game before. So Gregory Polanco, he's one of those guys with a portfolio or a profile full of injuries, so don't be shocked if next week he gets hurt and he's done for the year, you know. So you always have to be telling yourself the good and the bad with some of these guys. Robbie Grossman, I actually like more than Domingo Santana and Gregory Polanco.
Okay.
He has sat a little bit against left-handed pitching, but he does play pretty much every day, and he looks good, and he's a little bit of a power speed combination. So Robbie Grossman is somebody else I would look for. Wilmer Flores, he's hitting the ball really well. I know that he was dropped by some owners after the Coors Field series that they played a couple weeks ago, and that might have been the wrong move because he's been hitting the shit out of the ball. So In the last 3 weeks, he was hitting 316, 280, and then this week he's now hitting 467. He has 3 home runs this week.
Yeah.
10 RBI. I mean, he's been just surely elite this week for the San Francisco Giants. So anytime you see a hitter that's going to be stuffing the box scores that much, they're going to get some love.
Sure.
That's why he's mentioned there. So his ownership, I think, is a little bit – or that was the main event. So I think his ownership actually is if you don't mind, I'm going to check real quick to see what his ownership is. It's 94% in the TGFBI. So it is high in the 15-team league. So the love is already there for him there. So he's not mentioned, but it is 59% in the RotoWire Online Championship. So I felt like I had to mention him, even though he's a little bit high in the 50% range. And then two other guys, catchers again, if Will Smith was cut. Add him, and then your boy Yadi Molina, he is back in action, and he's hitting lower in the lineup than we were accustomed to seeing, but he's good volume. He's volume and he's good volume. So
Matthew,
Yadi is somebody I would like. Oh, and then real quick, I'm sorry, another Matt Carpenter as well. And these guys, the Cardinals are playing 8 games. So Shogo Akiyama, the Reds, they're playing 8 games. Matt Carpenter and Yadi Molina, the Cardinals, they're playing 8 games this week. So maybe you bump up their bids just a little bit because of the volume this upcoming week, and I don't mind their bats. So,
How are you handling Matthew in the outfield? We got some questions about guys like Corey Dickerson, Byron Buxton, are some names that popped out to me in 12-team formats. Any of those guys that you just mentioned, the Robbie Grossmans, or maybe you're playing at a util spot like a Wilmer Flores. How are you mixing and matching those kinds of names in there, or maybe even a guy like Evan White, who has caught fire recently? I think he homered twice yesterday for the Mariners, maybe just once, but I know he had a long ball. How would you mix and match those kinds of players? Are any of those cut worthy for you? Like a Buxton, for example, is he cuttable in a 12-team format with only 5 weeks to go? And are you adding one of these guys? What are you doing there?
I would cut Buxton in a 12-team, and I might even be cutting him this week in the main event. So for me, with only 5 weeks to go, I have no time to play around or hold guys like that. Corey Dickerson, I like. I know that a couple people actually cut him because he was on the bereavement list to start last week. So he was cut a little in a couple places, but he looks good. He hits right in the middle of that lineup behind Jesus Aguilar, in between Brian Anderson. Those guys get on base. The Marlins are scoring runs. So I like him. If Corey Dickerson's available, I actually would look to add him. So I don't want to cut Corey Dickerson.
Okay.
And then who is Evan White. It's funny how baseball works. If Evan White didn't hit the 2 home runs that you mentioned yesterday – or I'm sorry, it was only 1 home run. So he hit 2 home runs on the 17th. So he's hit 3 home runs in the last 5 days. But previously before that, before the 15th, he hadn't hit one since July 27th. So since the 15th, though, he's hit 4 home runs. So things change quickly, and we're now seeing him get going again. So I think I would actually, if I have him, I'm going to hold him. And if he's available, I might look to add him because he is playing every day. And
that lineup is interesting, man. Super interesting.
Or is he not playing every day now?
So we don't know what's going to happen with Dylan Moore on the IL with the right wrist sprain. I think Evan White plays every day now at this point. I think he's in. But you don't know, right? But he's certainly playing a lot. That's for sure.
Yeah. And the Dylan Moore point is fantastic. So yeah, you definitely should see him playing every day. And hey, then Matt, is a good.
What are you doing with Dylan Moore?
Cutting him. Easy cut everywhere. Okay.
No, yeah. I agree. I just was curious. I own Dylan Moore a lot of places. I'm really sad because dude has more energy out of the box. I love it. It's like watching some kids that I coach, but the fact that he's a Major League Baseball player. I think that's fair. Okay, fair enough.
Let's move on to, we've already discussed Joey Bart, so he's that next tier. And then the other guy's Jake Cronenworth. If he's available, I think you should get your hands on him. He was hot topic the last week and maybe even the week before that. Second base, first base, shortstop eligible. That comes with middle infield, corner infield. Once the return of, who was it? Somebody returned, Eric Hosmer. That was causing some concerns for playing time for him. But Jake Cronenworth has played every single game since August 14th. So, yeah. And we know that he is a power-speed combination, or he has that potential in him. We've seen it. So I like him a lot. If he's available, he's somebody that I would like to go for as well. Is there anybody else that you want to discuss before moving on to 12-team pitchers?
Nope. I think you nailed them all. Let's talk about 12-team pitchers, if you don't mind. From a pitching perspective, Matthew, a lot of the names you've covered in your 15-teamers, but I'm curious, anybody in particular in that 12-team list? You know, you run through the same cast of characters. A.J. Puck, Cal Quantrill, Josh Dalmont, Tyler Duffy, Tyler Rogers, moving all the way up even to Casey Mize. Anybody that, from a strategy perspective, you're really keen on or you think is different? I do see Justice Sheffield into your 10 to 15%, who I think is a really interesting name for the Mariners. But does anybody else stick out, or you feel like in your 12-team formats you've got to have, and maybe walk us through the why?
Rafael Dolis would be one of those guys that would be a little bit cheaper in a 12-team. We've seen him pick up a save. He's pitching late in the games. Jordan Romano and him have looked fantastic. Dolis owns a 26.4% strikeout rate. His walk rate is the only cause of concern for me, so I think that Romano kind of has the leg up there. Dolis has got a 12% strikeout rate or a swinging strike rate, so... the slider and the fastball for him have looked good, and so he's kind of somebody the Blue Jays seems like they're in a lot of close games as well. So Dolis and Romano, I think Romano's the guy there that you really want, but Dolis is somebody that's not going to cost as much, and I think that he's somebody that can come in and give you good ratios without, you know, kind of hurting you, along with, you know, racking up strikeouts and possibly getting a save. So he's somebody that I'm kind of interested in. The other person we similar boat would be Gregory Soto, Tyler Duffy, Josh Dalmont. Those are kind of all the similar guys. Tanner Roark is a two-step if you're desperate and really need that volume and you're kind of thirsty for a win. And Tommy Malone, he's another two-step as well. I don't really like either of their matchups. Tommy Malone has both of his on the road at Tampa Bay, at Toronto, and then Tanner Roark is at Tampa Bay versus Baltimore. So
okay.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they're both pitching in the AL East, so that's kind of what you have to expect. But they are two steps, and so I wanted to mention them. A couple other guys, you did mention Justice Sheffield. He has looked really good. I don't think he's allowed more than one earned run in any of his starts. And then his teammate Taiwan Walker, he looked good against the Dodgers. He held his own, and it was on the road at Dodger Stadium. Yep. So tons I like what I've misses. Seen from him. Yeah. So. Both of those guys look awesome in Seattle, and Brad Keller is another guy. I don't think he's allowed to run. I don't think he's allowed to run all year in his three starts. So
he Brad scares Keller, me, Matthew, a little right, bit. I'll be honest. His walk rate is scary. He's certainly, to your point, and if you didn't hear Matthew laughing, he's gonna allow some runs. That's for sure. His next three starts are pretty challenging. And that walk rate scares me. And so that's what I am. I am bidding on him in 12-teamers because of the two-step. But, man, I can tell you as a Tuki Toussaint owner who thought they were getting two starts and now he's not even getting two this week. He'll get two next week. That was rough to overcome from the beginning of this week. When I started with Tuki Toussaint, and another listener question was Ross Stripling, who looked awful in his last start, gave up a 6-2 lead, I think, to the Mariners, and then in the blink of an eye, I felt like it was 7-6. So, I think those are tread carefully. It's you got to be real careful on your volume. What do you have any concerns or questions, Matthew, on, or what are you thinking about a guy like Toussaint that has a two-step, or a guy like Dodger hurler Ross Stripling? What are you doing with these guys in an OC?
So, fortunately for us, Stripling's going to be pitching today at 1. If it's really, really bad, like we saw against the Mariners, then there could be some talk about possibly cutting him because it is a stuffed rotation, and Tony Gonsolin's knocking at the door continuously, and Dustin May, you know, doesn't allow more than one or two runs every outing, so it doesn't look like he's going anywhere. Alex Wood is scheduled to be coming back, I think, at the end of this week. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. I'm not sure if he finds his way back into the rotation as well. Yeah. So, or they could be looking to use him as trade bait. So I'm not really entirely sure what the Dodgers rotation is going to look like in 7 days from now.
Okay.
You know, we could be talking about Tony Gonsolin again and or somebody else.
So good. So good.
So and they have that luxury to just be sending guys down that aren't that are going six innings and not allowing runs, which is just wild. But Brad Keller, real quick, he's kind of the emphasis or example, similar to Tommy Malone, Tanner Roark. This article at the end, in the conclusion of my Fab article this week, it kind of it tells you to be cautious when it comes to streaming these two steps.
Yep.
Jordan Lyles is kind of that example of this week. He allowed over 10 earned runs in like less than five total innings. I think Belak was another guy that was being talked about and added as one of those sexy two steps, and it didn't work out for him. So that's kind of like the topic for me this week is understand like they can be massive landmines. So sometimes that volume, like we talk about with catchers as well with the two steps, man, bad volume can hurt you really, really bad. And it's tough to make up that ground. You mentioned the Touki Toussaint. I had that as well. I had Frankie Montas, Ross Stripling. So, and it's really difficult to make up that ground once you've kind of given it up. So tread with caution, be cautious when kind of going with some of those two steps. Brad Keller, when you look at the box score, there hasn't been any earned runs allowed that, as of yet. The walk rate is concerning. It's at 12.1%. His strikeout rate has never been high, so his K minus walk rate is only 10.6%, which isn't that great or which isn't great. His BABIP is at 190, which helps, but his FIP is at 299, which I was kind of I was surprised to see, but FIP is not in line with his XFIP and Sierra. His Sierra is 4.81 and his XFIP is 4.32, and I think that's closer to something that we should expect moving forward. He's missing a lot of bats, or not missing a lot of bats, but not allowing a lot of barrels. So that's kind of where the success in that low BABIP is coming from right now with a 2.4% barrel rate. So if guys start to barrel him up a little bit more, you're going to see, you know, you're going to see that hard hit rate possibly go up, but right now it's only at 33.3%. So he's kind of like a poor man's, I guess, if we're going to say the right-handed version of Kyle Freeland right now. Not getting a lot of strikeouts, but not allowing a lot of hard contact, not allowing a lot of barrels. So maybe he is able to, you know, mitigate some of that and continue that success if the walks go down. But I don't see that happening myself personally. And even if he isn't allowing a lot of hard contact or barrels, when you do allow those walks, the BABIP will essentially still go up 190. And then once that does happen, it's not going to be pretty. So that's kind of something to discuss, is people do get desperate for volume, and sometimes it hurts you, and more times than not, it does hurt you. So tread with caution.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Matthew, I think that kind of wraps things up. I did want to highlight real quickly, any two-start pitchers that we haven't discussed yet that stick out in your brain this week that we want to think about, or as we're getting our lineups ready before we close things out?
Sure. I'd actually kind of want to do something at the end here every week when we go into these two steps, and I kind of want to talk about other guys that aren't not necessarily even like, oh, they're only 50% owned, so we can talk about him. We really put our backs up against the wall sometimes when doing that, and we leave out a little bit, you know, just maybe just to discuss. So, like, I'm kind of intrigued to see what Framber Valdez moving forward does. He's kind of looked good for the Houston Astros, and he gets two home starts against the Angels and the A's. Kyle Gibson gets a home start against the two home starts, actually, one against the A's and one against the Dodgers. So some of these guys, I would be starting both of them, even for Kyle Gibson, it is tough. Is there anybody like that you kind of want to mention? Sean Manaea, he kind of looked decent finally in his last outing, but both of his starts are on the road. So he's going up against at Texas, at Houston. And so some of these guys, when you look at the tough matchups, kind of like Sean Manaea, and he hasn't been great all season, at what point do you go, I'm definitely starting him because he's a two-step, Or are you taking a step back and saying, oh, I don't know if I want to start him? And if you're right there at the I don't know if I want to start, should you just drop somebody like Sean Manaea in a 12-team league?
Yes.
I know that you're more of a RotoWire or an online championship guy. Yep. So what do we do with guys like that?
I think I'm cutting. I'm looking to add – I mean, I think your strategy changes now halfway through, and you're by far the more accomplished player than I am. But I think now you've really got to start looking, given that you've got – you're halfway through. And really, you can do as much help to your ratios right now as you can harm with throwing in two-steppers. I mean, I think you have to take a really hard look. For example, Matthew, this week in a 12-teamer, I benched Spencer Turnbull against the White Sox. And that's not a pat on the back because I made plenty of wrong calls this week as well, with Tuki Toussaint being one of those. But I think you have to really look at if it's a guy that you're not starting at this point, that roster spot in my mind is available to be used for a new player. I think that's the mindset that you have to have, especially late. You can't be married to any player, and that's what can really hurt you. It's hurt me in the past. So I totally agree. If I don't feel comfortable starting Sean Manaea in those matchups, I think the Texas one is obviously more tantalizing than Houston, but Texas has started to hit the ball a little bit more with Danny Santana coming back into the fold. In my mind, if you're not willing to start those guys now, you may get lucky with one more two-step the rest of the season. But unless they're facing, you know, two of the best offenses in the week, and that's the only reason you're not starting them, if they're fringy for me, Matthew, I'm reaching the cut point.
So check this out. This is going to be really tricky. We saw Alec Mills get lit up by your St. Louis Cardinals. He allowed six runs, seven hits, two walks, only racked up one strikeout. Going into the season, so let's say Alec Mills only had one start this upcoming week. I'm pretty sure he would be cut by most teams, right?
Yep.
Well, now Alec Mills is a two-step. And this is a double-edged sword where people are going to talk themselves back in, and they're going to go, okay, well, the first start's at Detroit. I kind of like that matchup. I've seen some good out of Alec Mills, and you know, and then if he can kind of scave by against the Reds, it can be a really good two-step. So people like that. So that's like it's a trap meme. You know, it's kind of like Alec Mills. I think this week it's a trap, and I think in a 12-team league you should be cutting him. I think that in a 12-team league that there's other guys that are more viable. I would simply rather have Justin Sheffield or Tywan Walker or Alex Young for his two-step. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes when we see a bad outing and we're like, we're going to cut that guy. Fuck him. He screwed up my ratios. He look at me. I dropped in standings or whatever. You're just like, you want to cut, right? And then you start to look at your setting transactions in your lineup before Sunday Night Fab Locks.
Yep.
You're like, oh, fuck, Alec Mills has two starts. What do I do now? And so you get put in these really tough situations in two-start pitchers that sometimes you don't really want to be in. And I have a hunch this week that the Brad Keller and the Alec Mills, even Eric Fetty, these guys might hurt you more than they're going to help. So
I'll throw one in for you, Matthew, that happened to me, Mike Minor.
Yep.
I've been thinking Mike Miner's going to turn a corner, and I keep putting him in, and he keeps burying me in my ratios. Mm-hmm. So he's a cut for me this week in a 12-team format.
One last one would be Germán Márquez. So his first start is at Arizona. Love it. And then he gets the home start at Coors Field against the Padres. And his last start at home was not like the first start that we saw at home. So
no, he's a polarizing one.
It was 10 earned runs, dude. He had five starts with not allowing more than two earned runs, and then he ends up giving up 10.
Yeah, this is an expert opinion, but 10 earned runs isn't good for your team. I can tell you that much.
God, that's just nauseating.
Yeah,
I mean,
it hurts you for the year. I mean, 10.
Gross.
You can only have maybe one of those that don't completely bury your ratios. You get another one from anybody else, you're fighting an uphill battle.
So yeah, fortunately, it wasn't like 10 in like one or two innings. It was five innings. So it wasn't, you know, it was kind of bled you out a little bit slow, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So are we good to go here?
I think so. I don't have anything else.
Well, I had a lot of fun doing Fab again. This is my favorite podcast that we do each week.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, a ton of good information. Please go check out Matthew's article. If it's not up already over at FTN, it'll be
up
soon.
It is. It's up.
Okay,
it's
great. Up. Yeah, so check out Matthew's article. It's a super deep look. My fab article for NumberFire posted yesterday. It's a little bit different format and a little bit less players, but certainly if you want to take that a peek, that's an interesting one as well. But certainly, please go check out Matthew's article. It's the basis for some great analysis. We are going to be back this week again with our normal cast of episodes. Matthew, it was very fun. Great work as always. I love quizzing you on these players. Anything for you before we cut out?
I'm going to get off here and send some cheeseburgers to Tristan McKenzie's apartment.
Nice.
That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. The kid is 6'5". I am such a fan, dude. I watched every single pitch and I was just, oh man, I was gushing. So he's 6'5", 165, by the way, just to close thing out. I don't think I've ever seen a frame like that in the MLB. So I will be rooting him on every step of the way. So
yeah.
Best of luck in your fab bidding tonight, guys. Thank you so much for listening as usual. And please feel free to share how your fab ended up with Matt and I on Twitter tonight. So after 7 p.m. on the West Coast, 10 p.m. on the East Coast, tag us on Twitter and let us know what went well, what went bad. If you have any questions or want some thoughts on how your fabbing went, please let us know. Bother us. We love to interact with you guys. So, again, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back early next week. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.